As Walt already insinuated, I think it's pretty obvious why I'm talking about corn at a cotton meeting. And if you've been at many of the meetings at all, it seems like it's almost a theme this year that there's a lot of interface things we need to consider. And a lot of the talk's been around plant bugs, but we also need to consider corn earworm. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Roger Leonard and Fred Musser. I'd also like to acknowledge the input of some other people. I'm not going to name names, but I've got a lot of input from other scientists, including people from Monsanto. And I'm not going to claim to be an expert on a lot of this. My intent with this presentation is to raise some questions, ask some questions, and maybe facilitate some discussion. Let's start off by just talking a little bit about some relevant BT traits, the ones we're going to touch on mostly today. Now, in corn, I think everybody's familiar with the two traits that are commercially available right now, YieldGuard and HerculX, which contain Cry1AB and Cry1F, respectively. I've tested this year, and for the last several years, some other scientists, including my co-authors, have been looking at a new trait, YieldGuard BT Pro. This is a stacked BT cotton that has two genes in it. One is Cry2AB. This is the same protein that's in Bolgard 2. The other one is a hybrid protein designated Cry1A.105. Monsanto has a registration package in. Based on their comments, they expect registration in late 2008 or potentially 2009. To get back to this hybrid protein, this Cry1A.105, it is a hybrid protein. It's essentially manufactured, and it's a hybrid between Cry1F and Cry1A, specifically, I think, Cry1AC. And it retains some of the characteristics of both, and Cry1F has a little better activity, for example, on fall armyworm, and it retains some of that activity. Now, I don't really understand the activity spectrum very, very clearly of this protein compared to either of its parents. It apparently provides some better corn earworm control than either parent alone. And in part, some of the comments I got is that because this protein is expressed in higher concentration in the plant than those original events. And that's one thing we always got to remember with the BT toxins, is you can't just talk about the activity of the protein, you have to talk about the dose that's being delivered. Down at the bottom, I think everybody knows the proteins involved in Bolgard, Wide Strike, and Bolgard 2 just indicate that there is a lot of similarities there, a lot of the same proteins or similar proteins being used. In this registration package, and I'm sure if I make a mistake, I'll be corrected, Monsanto has proposed some changes in the refugia requirements. In the Corn Belt, Monsanto is proposing that their refugia requirement decrease from 20% non-BT cotton to 5% non-BT cotton. In the Cotton Belt, the change will go from 50-50 to an 80-20 non-BT cotton refuge. And I do think it's very important to point out here that some growers in the Mid-South have paid a price for having this 50-50 refuge requirement, particularly in areas where they have a lot of corn borers that haven't been able to use the technology as well, and hence there's been a little bit of a yield penalty, some cases more than a little bit of a yield penalty. Talk a little bit about the attributes and the potential benefits in general. The BT Pro, like the original YieldGuard and HerculX, is extremely effective on corn borers, including the Southwestern and European corn borer. As you'll see, we expect increased efficacy on corn earworm, i.e. the bollworm, fall armyworm, and some other less common caterpillars. And part of the logic of having a stacked BT trait is that it may help prevent or delay resistance in BT corn, and this is primarily targeting the corn borer populations. I just want to show this slide very quickly. This is actually showing tunnel length in 20 plants. From Fred Musser's data in Mississippi last year. We got a lot of data just like this, and it's just to make the one point that VT Pro, YieldGuard, and HerculX provide excellent corn borer control. In fact, they're so good it's almost impossible to distinguish among them. You'll also see, if you look down there at the bushels per acre, a little bit of a hint of this yield penalty you might pay in some areas when you get southwestern corn borer infestations. You might see in some cases 20 or 30 bushel yield loss in a non-BT hybrid. All right, going backwards again and giving a little more background. I think most of us are aware that YieldGuard and HerculX have relatively low impact on corn earworm. We do know that they delay maturation. They cause some mortality, which is pretty variable. 20 to 50% would be a good guesswork. It may appear to be less in some circumstances because we get a lot of mortality that can be replaced by another caterpillar in waiting. But overall, it's relatively low selection pressure on the corn earworm. Bolgard has what I'd call moderate impact on bollworms. If I was asked to put one number to it, I'd put 65%, but we know in reality there are environments or times of the season where it may be 100% and some environments where it may not be quite that good. Undoubtedly, Bolgard 2 and Wide Strike have higher impact, closer to 90% mortality, the number I would give it, but not generally considered a high dose in terms of insect resistance management and our understanding of that word. And also keep in mind through this presentation, as everybody's aware, that Bolgard 2 and Wide Strike no longer have a refugia requirement. A couple of other points to consider during this presentation is that laboratory-identified resistant genes in corn earworms so far have really been dominant traits, or at the very least you could say they've not been single-gene recessive traits. That's important because most IRM in cotton and corn has been based on tobacco budworm or corn borer resistance, and that's one of the primary presumptions. And Dr. Mullins just talked about some debatable claims of field resistance to Cry1AC by Bruce Tabashnik. And later in the session, we're going to hear about fitness costs that are at least sometimes associated with resistance by Bill Moore and his graduate student. All right, let's get back and talk about the impact of the technology, this VT Pro technology on corn earworm. This is actually my data from this year. The light blue bar is larvae per 10 ears taken in late August. This corn was late planted, so it wasn't near maturity at that time. And the blue bar is a week later where we just documented the frequency of tip damage in those ears. And one thing that jumps out very obviously to you is that VT Pro is a significant improvement over YieldGuard and Herculex. And another thing, if you look at this data set very long, is you'll actually see that there appears at this time to be more larvae in the ears of YieldGuard and Herculex and more tip damage, more larvae in the ears of YieldGuard and Herculex than the non-BT. Now, it doesn't statistically separate here, but I see this commonly, and what this is that it's that delay in maturation. The larvae in the non-BT corn has already developed and passed through the ground and pupated, and you can see that in the kernel damage, where it's quite a bit higher in the non-BT corn. This is another way to look at some data. This is data from MSU, LSU, and UT, and I'm really proud of this slide, the way I color-coded it with our school colors. But this is looking at relative kernel damage, and what I did is I took the non-BT corn, and I said, we're going to set that to 100%, and this is showing you end-of-season percentage relative kernel damage in the other traits. And again, VT Pro is considerably less than YieldGuard and Herculex, where YieldGuard and Herculex, you're only seeing about a 20 or 30% reduction in kernel damage. Now, the UT kind of sticks out as being a little bit different, but that's kind of an artifact of our test. We had a lot of natural infestations of southwestern corn borer, which really inflated kernel damage in the non-VT corn. It looks to me like the VT Pro is about maybe 60% reduction in kernel damage compared to the YieldGuard and Herculex technology. So in summary, for corn, the VT Pro significantly reduced corn earworm populations compared to the technologies that are out right now. You can debate the numbers that are up here. I think it may provide somewhere from 70 to potentially 95% control, and it may be that variable in reality. However, we don't have direct measures of mortality or moth production, and we need to keep that in mind. We're kind of making extrapolations from larval counts, which aren't necessarily the same, and that is a weakness here. I asked the question right now, does this represent a high dose? Another point I should make, in our limited data set, we didn't see any evidence that this better corn earworm control actually improved corn yields. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but we didn't see it in this data set. That's a strange bullet there. I don't know why that's there. But because of corn borers, though, also keep in mind that corn borers in some areas could certainly benefit from the adoption of the YieldGuard VT Pro technology, particularly in the South, and that's because if they get this reduced refuge requirement approved, they'll be able to grow more VT corn in those high corn borer areas. A few observations about bollworm. I think we all know that a relatively high percentage of the bollworm population is funneled through corn in many areas. I'd say in the Mid-South, which is the area I'm most experienced with, it's an even higher percentage during May and June, when that is the primary host at probably the most attractive time. C3, C4 analysis of these moths indicate that C4 plants, meaning corn and other grasses, are a primary source during this time frame. Also keep in mind that corn and soybean are key and competing hosts in the South, and part of this is because of the acreages, and part of it is because of the quality of those plants as hosts. Another piece of literature to keep in mind is there is some potential for reverse fall migration from north to south. I'm citing a paper here by Fred Gould and colleagues. What that implies is it's possible that the Corn Belt could represent an actual bollworm refuge for us in the south. This is some information that I borrowed from a petition with Monsanto's permission in their application to amend the Bogart II registration. I've tweaked it a little bit. I'm citing here Gustafson and Head in particular. I've used their numbers of moth production per acre, and what this is showing you is the moths being produced in the landscape during a growing season. I've tweaked the acreage a little bit, I think, to represent their hypothetical acreages, but they're probably pretty close to reality. The real point I want to make here is in this hypothetical situation based on some real numbers based on the literature, corn is an extremely important host. And in this, what I call in the southeast scenario here, with their acreage and, corn's producing in the landscape the majority of the moths, in this case just a small majority of the moths, and soybeans is very important. Now here's some, again, the same slide, but I've tweaked it myself and I've changed a few numbers just to give you an idea of how little changes can influence things. This is what I'm going to call a Mid-South scenario. I've used hypothetical Mississippi acreages, which I think are going to be pretty close to this year or last year, and I've tweaked some numbers in here. I've given corn a little more credit. I think it's certainly conceivable that one out of every two or three corn plants could produce a corn earworm moth, and therefore I've increased moth production. My experience, at least in parts of the Mid-South, we do not get the moth production or bollworm populations in soybeans that we saw and sometimes routinely see in parts of the Southeast. So in this scenario, here you got 80% of the moths being essentially funneled through corn. So what are some implications? Well, first of all, let's talk about some things we know are positive or potentially positive. Widespread adoption of stacked BT corn traits will, I'm convinced, reduce the magnitude of bollworm flights that are observed subsequently in cotton. We don't know how much exactly, and some of that depends on migration influences and things, but I think it'll be significant and observable. There's no question that the YieldGuard BT Pro, Bogart 2, and WideStrike cause more mortality than the original BT technologies, so without question there is more selection pressure. You know, there's some fundamental questions, and I'm not trying to answer the questions. I'm trying to raise the questions and get some discussion going. Do these technologies represent a high dose? If they don't represent a high dose, can we even realistically manage this with a traditional refuge concept? Will bollworm resistance be a single gene, multiple gene, dominant gene, recessive event? We don't necessarily know the answers to those questions. You could ask the question whether we really need two genes in corn for corn borer resistance management. That first gene's so good, it's a legitimate question. And also keep in mind that none of these things are occurring in a vacuum. There's other BT traits being launched by other companies at all times, so it's not a static system. So the real question is, do we know enough to predict how BT traits will influence IRM? And if the answer is we don't, then what do we do? And some of that comes down to philosophy and personality, and like I said, again, my intent was not to propose alternative or really any IRM plans. I just wanted to put some points out there for discussion. And with that, I will conclude. Tim handed me a note about 45 seconds ago, said I was almost up.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.